Hi, today's November 8th, 2020. This is Mold Views Podcast 338. I'm Todd Ogasawart, my good friend John Westfall. And I think, well, I don't know what to think. But the last topic is the one most interesting to John and me, I think.
Yeah, and that's talk for a while, and it might be long, it might be short, but we don't try to predict that anymore because it just never works out the way we think.
Yeah, we're about as accurate as a political pollsters. So.
Yeah. She is about on par with that.
Yeah.
And we never learn.
Yeah.
It's like political pollsters.
Yeah, exactly. that's where we're going to go. And so the first thing I want to talk about is something, you know, again, I every couple of weeks I say, you know, I need to stop talking to Dr. John Westfall. Because often when I do, he sometimes purposefully, sometimes just, you know, just an aside, he says, makes me spend money.
And well, so, I'm not going to tell you about the random things I bought this week, because I went on a little bit of a tear with a couple of different bags that I found and a few other things. So I'm not even going to bring those up.
Okay. Any rate, so after our discussion last week, you know, I mentioned last week that that I upgraded from my iPhone XS to an iPhone 12 Pro. And for some reason, although I restored it from the XS backup, instead of using roughly 60 gigabytes on my new iPhone, it was like 100 and almost 140. I want to say it was 136 gigs. So almost double. Don't know. I still don't know why. I haven't done the research. But as a result, I didn't have enough space on my 200 gigabyte iCloud account, which I paid, I guess, $1.99 or $2.99 a month. Probably $2.99 a month. So I ended up upgrading to the $14.99 a month 2 terabyte upgrade, because that's the jump from 200 gigs to 2 terabytes. There's nothing in between. And in talking to John about it last week, or discussing it with John last week, he says, well, you know, you can get 2 terabytes of storage if you go to Apple One's Premier, I think it's called Premier level, which is also a family level, and you share it with your family, then, you know, you might actually come out ahead. And I go, well, there's some merit to that thought. So that's what I did. And so,
which is interesting, you're not as big of a Apple services user as I think your family members are.
That's true.
So,
particularly my daughter, who is an adult, by the way. So, you know, she had been paying for her own, and we didn't have a family plan. So anyway, I had to make a call to Apple support and try to understand what was going to happen, you know, if they went from their current paid, they each have their own, like, $3 a month or $2 a month or whatever iCloud storage, and I brought them under the family plan, and the person I spoke to was fairly convincing that, you know, what I thought would happen would. And so I started a 30-day trial, so I'm not actually paying for it yet. I will in 21 days or so. And what will happen is their plan should automatically cancel when my first paid plan happens, which I assume will be, like I said, in about 3 weeks now. And my plan, my current $14.99 month plan should also disappear. In the meantime, I have 4 terabytes of storage because the trial does not supersede or override the existing plan. So I've got 2 terabytes from my $14.99 plus 2 terabytes from my trial period. So I got to monitor this carefully over the coming weeks, make sure I'm not paying for both, you know, 2 terabytes and Apple One. As well as my wife and daughter, who are paying, you know, $3 a month or whatever it is they're paying for 200 gigabytes. But at any rate, I have to say, you know, John's been telling me for, I guess ever since it started, that he kind of enjoyed the Apple News Plus feature. And I have to say, I have not been making maximum use of it, but it's nice not to hit the paywall when I click on certain articles in the news feed. I did notice that they have some interesting new magazines added. I think PC World was added, and maybe National Geographic, a few things that I really am interested in. I haven't opened up the digital versions of them to see what they look like, but I'm looking forward to that. And you know, the other thing, which I'll talk about a little later, why this became a little bit more important, is Apple Arcade. So I downloaded, I think, 5 games so far. all on the iPad. I haven't done any on the iPhone. And one of them, I think it's called Choo Choo Rocket, I find really entertaining. But and there's a reason why Apple Arcade came into play in my decision making, which we'll discuss later. And let's see, so News Plus, Apple Arcade, you know, iCloud, which is the main reason I upgraded. And Apple Music, doesn't really matter to me. I think my daughter, I do have a family plan for what used to be Google Play. I think it's called YouTube Music now. So she has two now, or we all have two. Anyway, so far I'm okay with it. I'll have to monitor the whole subscription thing to see I don't get a double subscription fee in a while. I was told again that it would automatically cancel once I pay for the first Apple One subscription payment, and that they would prorate it so that if it's the starting periods don't match, which I don't think they do, I'll get a slight refund or a full refund depending on when it happens.
And I know you're a physical fitness nut, so you'll really enjoy Fitness Plus when it finally launches.
I am not a physical fitness nut, as anyone has ever seen me knows. But I do keep track of it. I have a Fitbit, and I bought a pulse oximeter and all those kind of things. So mostly because I'm old, not so much a fitness nut. Anyway, John, you too bought something apparently, or ordered something.
Yeah, so I actually ordered, I found two different bags this week. One's a backpack and one's a duffel bag that I ordered just because eventually I might travel again. And I might, I have been using a backpack at work a lot more since I've started taking my MacBook back and forth to work. So I thought, well, maybe an actual nice work backpack would be nice. But I'm not going to talk about that. I'm going to talk about the fact that I ordered an iPhone 12 Pro Max yesterday morning, or I guess Friday morning, the 256 gig version, because I do plan on using it to take a lot of photos.
Yep.
I am going to be rebuilding it from scratch. I'm not going to try to or restore my iPhone 10's backup, just because I've been on that one install of iOS for 3.5-4 years now, and I sort of feel like that means I probably should try to rebuild from scratch.
Good point.
iOS still isn't as clean as I think we would like it to be. And I bought a cheap Spigen case on Amazon just to have something to hold me over until the 12 South book ships that I pre-ordered. Plus, I do like to have just a regular cheap slip case for my phones.
Is that how you pronounce it? I've never known. I've never figured it out.
I believe it is.
Okay.
Spigen. I think I heard that from somewhere. It wasn't just my head.
Okay. Because I've ordered that that brand from that. Well, I've ordered cases of that brand before. Really like them. They're really good. I just never knew how to pronounce it. Anyway, sorry. Go ahead.
And then the interesting thing was, as I was pre-ordering my 12 Pro Max, one of my best friends, or actually my best friend since seventh grade, ordered one as well. Wow. And he's been on Android for about 10 years now. Wow. He was a fairly early adopter of Android. He was a Windows Mobile user before Android.
Yeah.
So he's followed me on various things. And I made the jump from Android to iOS in 2014. He stayed on Android. And, it was his first time ordering through the Apple pre-order process, and it was a little bit bumpy here and there, but he got it ordered before the shipping time started slipping, which actually didn't happen until about midday on Friday. Ironically, he then tried to order breakfast at Dunkin' Donuts, and since he hadn't been there in a while, I think it was more trouble to order that through the Dunkin' Donuts app than Apple. Dunkin' Donuts, I don't know if anyone uses their app very infrequently, but they have next levels of paranoia on security for their app. So if it's not installed and regularly opened here and there, sometimes you can get locked out of your Dunkin' account.
Really?
Well, I only know this because I have a $10 Dunkin' card that I bought years ago and haven't been able to use because, the nearest one is 400 miles away. So I've been planning on eventually using it at some place when I travel, but I haven't traveled since March, so hasn't happened. But anyway, I'm very curious to see what his experience is going to be. He's been on a MacBook on and off for years. He's owned one since 2013. He bought an old iPad off of me years ago. But this is his first time on iOS as his phone. And so I'm curious what you think his switching experience will be, what he might miss from modern Android distributions, what he might do starting off on his phone that will make it feel a little more comfortable. Because, you know, the last time I switched from Android to iOS, Android was in, I think, version 5.
Right.
So it was a while ago.
Wow. I'm looking at my, as you were speaking, I was looking at my Google Pixel 4a, you know, trying to think what his experience will be switching from it. You know, the negatives, I'm trying to think what the negatives are, and I really can't come. It's a great, I like Google Android, as you know, because I still use it for a variety of reasons, mostly because I'm a nerd. But the one thing he's going to miss is fingerprint reading with a mask on. I don't know if you guys wear masks, or he wears a mask in the state he's in. But we do here. It's mandatory. It is a requirement when you're outdoors, and it is a giant hassle. You know, it's some of the more what's the word I want to use? Vocal, op-ed type folks about the iPhone say, you know, it's like clawing at my iPhone like an animal every time I need to unlock it when I'm not in my home. Yeah, whereas with the Pixel, or, you know what, I don't know what he uses now, but at least with the Pixel 4a and everything before it, going back to the Pixel 2, I think, you know, I tap my finger on the back of the case and boom, it's unlocked. So that's really nice. He's going to miss that a lot. I know I miss it. I think he's going to be, he might be irritated by the notch, which still exists.
You know, I was thinking about the notch the other day and how it was predicted to be so irritating, and I mentioned it to my wife and said, you know, I don't even
notice
the
it.
Notch. Yeah. And her exact response was, what notch? And she uses an iPhone 10 as well, and I said, you know, the notch at the top of your screen. And she had also just kind of, you know, tuned it out as well. So.
Yeah, she moved it to her blind spot, a cognitive blind spot. Doesn't see it. Well, but, you know, if you're using an Android phone all these years and you don't have a notch, at least I don't. My Pixel 4a does not have a notch. I don't know where the front-facing camera is. I guess it's under the screen somewhere. I never thought about that. But that might be a little, at least noticeable for a while. You know, it's like when you get a little paper cut on your finger and you don't think about it until you need to type or something, right? We actually. So there's that. On the other hand, what he will like is typing on an iPhone is still superior to an Android phone. I would say the iPhone's autocorrect, which still has some funny autocorrects, but in general, the iPhone's autocorrect and just the basic screen type ability, I'm not sure what the word is, but is so much more accurate than I am on my Pixel 4. And, you know, I have the smaller iPhone, right? I have the iPhone 12 Pro, not the Max. So I'm looking at the two phones now, and they're about the same size. I would say that the iPhone 12 Pro is maybe slightly wider, kind of looking at it, but let's call them very similar. And so it's not that one has a bigger screen and one has a much smaller screen that's causing a problem. No, it's something else. It's something about the keyboard design and the autocorrect feature in the Apple that is just way better, way, 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 way better, in my opinion, when you're typing on an iPhone. Other than that, it's hard to say, because, you know, you can get the full Google ecosystem on the iPhone. So, you know.
Yeah.
Email, and now you can spreadsheets.
Set the apps to be, default.
Yeah.
So that's another thing. The two things I think he's going to really like from this last iOS update are the app drawer, which basically emulates the app drawer in Android. You know, the idea that you don't have to have icons for everything. You can have them all neatly in one area.
Right.
And also I totally lost my train of thought. Another thing.
Uh-oh.
You'll like another
thing. You're so young.
But, yeah, I know.
I think he'll, if he doesn't appreciate it right away, I think he will. And I think what he'll really like is a camera. As good as the 4A camera is, and it is good, the 12 Pro is better. The one thing he might miss, depending on his, you know, interests, is the iPhone does not have the astrophotography mode for the camera that the Pixel, starting with the 4, I think, 4, 4A, 5, all have. I've only used it a couple times myself, but I'm not an astronomy buff. I just did it to test, and it is, quite frankly, it's spectacular.
Well, we will see. I will keep our listeners updated.
Yep.
On what his response is, but yep. I'm very curious to see how he feels about it. And I think he was just ready for a change. I also think for a long time what kept him on Android was the price point.
Yep.
And now with Android phones getting just, you know, top-of-the-line Android phones getting just as pricey as iPhones, it's really hard to go with that price point still.
Although, that said, you know, in defense of Android, the Pixel 4a at $350 for 128-gigabyte storage model is a good deal. Good deal, right? There's nothing equivalent. There's nothing, not even equivalent. There's nothing you can buy that's new from Apple that's at $350 that I can think of. Maybe an older model that's still on sale, but I think the Pixel 4 still has better features than the older models. It's just when you start comparing it to the, you know, the 11 and 12 line that it starts falling back a bit.
Oh, I do remember what I was going to say that you like, and that is the fact that you can set default apps. So if you want, you know, Gmail to be your default email client or Outlook to be your default mail client, you can do that.
Right. Okay. Next on my list is something, and this is one of those things that, well, a predecessor of it in a way, something John, again, talked me into buying without really talking me into anything, just kind of mentioned it. You remember I bought that $300 Raspberry Pi 4 kit that looks like something you can't take through TSA. I can't remember what it's called now. And I still haven't played with it much. But at any rate, so now I'm going to tempt John because he has bought several Raspberry Pis, as if I recall correctly. There is now a Raspberry Pi 400 out. It is from the, you know, Raspberry Pi Foundation. It still is not available in the U.S., I think. I signed up for one to be notified when it's available, an Adafruit. So it's $100, I think. It has an overclocked Pi 4, and it's built into a Pi keyboard. If you've ever seen the little Pi colorful keyboard, which I have as part of my other kit. Anyway, it's built into the keyboard, and it's also overclocked. So it's actually faster than the Pi 4 I bought because it's overclocked. It's got all the ports, including the GPIO. You need a little dongle thing to really use the GPIO, but that's reasonable to extend it because otherwise it's kind of a hassle to plug into it. But it's got, you know, all the ports, USB-C, USB-A, you know, all that kind of stuff. I think it comes with a keyboard and mouse, a Bluetooth keyboard and mouse. All you got to do really is provide a display. And although people have been comparing it to the Apple II, really, it's a throwback to the, for folks old enough, the Radio Shack TRS-80 Model 1, which was a computer built into a keyboard. It also came in a monitor. But everything was in the keyboard. You plug it into monitor. There was no mouse, of course, back then. And there you are. You're off and running. So $100, all you do is add a monitor. That sounds like a deal to me. So even though it's more aspirational than anything else, like my previous Raspberry Pi purchase, I think I'm going to put my money down just to support Pi and folks like Adafruit.
I am waiting anxiously. My godson turns 5 next month, so a few more years, and I'll be able to start inflicting computer-related stuff on him, you know, learning to program and, you know, those sorts of things. And I think this is the sort of product that would be perfect for someone who's just starting out with computers, you know, 7 or 8 years old, really interested in how they work and how to program them. Just very similar to the Crow Pi that you bought.
Yeah.
The briefcase. That's another one that I could see kids really getting into, and adults as well.
But yep.
It's a fun thing. I'm still waiting, as I put in our show notes, for my Pi Boy, which is the Raspberry Pi that is built into a Game Boy case.
That's pretty cool.
I ordered it on August 15th. It entered in processing on October 25th. And at that time, they told me that I might get a tracking number within 5 days. Well, it has been longer than 5 days of October 25th. So I figure I'll give them until Thanksgiving. And if I don't get a tracking number by then, I will send another note. I already sent one at the beginning of October saying, hey, what's going on with this?
Yeah.
But I would eventually like to get one of them because they just look really cool. And another thing that I think would be really useful when I do travel again to be able to, you know, play some old school Game Boy games and such in the car while my wife's driving.
Yeah, I was just going to say about your friend and their son, is that they should, you know, if they ever complain to you about the influence you have on gadgets on their son, you can say, well, just be glad I'm not a drummer.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it could be way worse. And, you know, I look at all these kits. You know, they have the Harry Potter kit where it pairs with your iPad and you basically write pseudocode on the iPad and then use the wand to activate, you know, because it's got a accelerometer in the wand. And so you can switch and flish and execute the code on the iPad and that sort of thing. So I'm just waiting until my nieces and my nephews and my godson and his siblings, I'm just waiting until they get old enough that I can, you know, if I see a glimmer of geek or a glimmer of, you know, anything else in there that I'm passionate about, I'm ready to jump on that.
All right. To me, that's a good thing. I was always a little disappointed my daughter was not as interested in gadgets as I am. But she knows how to use them. So
I try to cover all the bases. You know, I try to cover gadgets, creative writing, professional writing, knitting and crocheting. I mean, there's got to be something in there the kid's going to like.
Lock picking.
Yeah, lock picking. You know, I got it all. Really, you know.
That I'm not so sure their parents will be appreciative of.
Well, they will when they lock themselves out of the house or the car. Then it's going to be Uncle John taught you that.
Okay. So I was going to mention not so much the gadget I received yesterday, which is, again, one of my more aspirational purchases. I'm showing it to John on video.
I have actually looked at this myself because even though I do not know how to use the keys on it, I've been very aspirational thinking of teaching myself how to.
Okay.
So
I bought an Akai Professional. That's the brand. Akai is the brand. Electronics buffs will know the Akai brand. It's called the LPK25 Wireless MIDI Controller Keyboard. And so it's got a 25 key piano keys on it. So basically it's, you know, 2.5 octaves, right? Well, not even 2.5. Let's call it 2 octaves. It's got 25 keys. It is not weighted, which means it doesn't feel like piano keys, which is a little unfortunate, but it's also like $118. So, you know, I'm not going to complain that much about it. And I read the reviews before I bought it, so I knew what I was getting into. It does feel kind of like a toy keys because it's, again, not weighted, but it does have a lot of resistance and enough travel that you feel like you're playing something. So it's a MIDI controller, not a synthesizer, which means it doesn't make any sound. But the main thing is I wanted something to noodle on, kind of like my doodles with my Apple Pencil and Procreate and other applications. I wanted something audio to noodle on because, I don't know, it just seemed like kind of fun. And the reason I bought this is one of the things I know from previous purchases of various kinds of musical gadgets is I hate plugging stuff in, finding the cable, plugging it in, making it, you know, all that stuff. So this is a Bluetooth. That's why it's wireless. It's a Bluetooth MIDI controller. And the interesting thing to me was how it connects, you know. Also, it's either bus powered through USB. It's got a USB-A to USB-B. So it's got a USB-B on the controller side, and you plug it into USB-A for power. Or you can put in 3 AAA batteries if you're going to just use it wirelessly. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, AA batteries, 3 AA batteries. But the interesting thing is, you know, every Bluetooth device I've ever bought, an Apple device, you go into the iOS settings, go to Bluetooth, and you pair it, and you're kind of done, right? And then the problem is if you want to pair that device with something else, like, you know, if it's a QWERTY keyboard, for example, generally speaking, you got to go through the whole thing again, and it's kind of a hassle to pair, in my opinion. And there you go. You know, it's just a little bit. So I thought, well, okay, I'll just use it at one iPad and I'll be happy. But it turns out this doesn't use the Apple settings, the iOS settings to pair. You pair it from the application itself because it's a Bluetooth MIDI pairing. And you would say, well, isn't that as much of a hassle? No, it's like 2 keystrokes and you're there. It's really simple and it's really fast and it's very, what's the word I want to use? Stable? Maybe that's not the word. Consistent. It just works. And so I can move it from iOS device to iOS device, and in two clicks, I'm good to go on GarageBand, let's say, which is the only thing I really have. But it's really, really fun. And even though it's only got 22 octaves, it's got octave buttons, so if you need to go beyond it, you can press up or down with your... Generally, it's a one-handed playing, right? You're not going to play with two hands. Or you could, but you only have two octaves. And you can go up and down to get keys that don't exist on the keyboard. Really fun. I've only had it for less than 24 hours now, but it's really fun. I'm glad I bought it. I bought a case for it, or at least it says, but it turns out that the LPK25 non-wireless is apparently a very different size from this one, so the case doesn't fit, but that's okay. That's my fault. I didn't do the research, so oh well. What you gonna do? But anyway, it was a Bluetooth pairing I thought was interesting.
You know, the only musical instrument that I ever knew how to play in a very mediocre way was violin.
Oh, really?
I spent about 6 years playing very mediocre violin. And so I can read music, and I have very much thought about teaching myself keyboard just so that I can do some noodling like what you are talking about. But I thus far have not gotten around to that. Maybe that'll be if this blasted pandemic lasts much longer. I'm running out of books to write, so I might just have to dig out a keyboard of some sort and try that out. I actually have one of those roll-up keyboards.
Oh, really?
Somewhere that were popular 10 years ago. So I could drag that thing out. And I do believe it has MIDI connection ports on it and such. I could play with it. But that'll be maybe the spring program after I finish with the book I'm writing right now. So
okay. Is this a book for fun or one of your academic books?
It is another book for A-Press.
Oh, good.
Which we actually, I don't think we've talked about on the show because I started writing it while we were in our hiatus.
Ah.
And so I'm finishing up. I have two more chapters to write the first draft of. And so then we'll talk about it once I've completed that book.
All right. Sounds good. Looking forward to it. All right. So, speaking of your violin, so my dad in high school, he went to a boarding school, in a high school boarding school, and his roommate played violin poorly, and till the day he died, my dad hated the sound of a violin. but in any case, all right. Finally, is it sad? Maybe it's sort of sad, but interesting. So, on November the 3rd, this past Tuesday, I don't know if anything else was going on this past Tuesday, but for me it was a momentous day because I finally came to a decision to upgrade my iPad Mini 4 from iOS 10.3.3 to iPad OS 14.2, and of course this meant that I would lose the ability to play my favorite ever game, period, Sid Meier's Civilization. And I know there's 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 available, and I don't like any of them. I like the original. I've been playing with it since it was on MS-DOS, I think. It wasn't even Windows. But at any rate. And the reason I updated it was there were enough applications that just stopped working because my version of iOS was so old. Either they stopped working, or I couldn't upgrade it, or they worked funny. And so I made the jump, again, 10.3.3 to 14.2. So we're talking 4 years leap. Is that right? Yeah, I guess 4 years leap, or maybe less. But it's been a couple of years, 3 years, I guess, since the last time I updated this. And one of the shocking things to me was that, I knew I wasn't getting updates for a lot of apps. Every week I'd see maybe 4 or 5 or 6 updates available for 10.3.3, and most of them wouldn't actually update. I said, no, we thought we could update you, but no, not really. So after I updated to 14.2 from 10.3.3, 71 apps had updates waiting on my app store. 71. So that took a while. And the other thing I noticed, which I still don't quite know why, maybe John knows, for about 2 days, maybe 3 days after that update to 14.2, the iPad Mini 4's battery life, and I wasn't using it much, right? Most of the time the cover was closed and it was in sleep mode. It would just drain 20, 30, 40%. in the day, doing mostly nothing. So that kind of stopped. I think the battery life is back to normal-ish. So, well, we'll have to wait and see. But I guess I'm glad I updated it. You know, and I now have access to all the apps that, you know, I do on other devices, and it's nice to have. It's really nice to have.
And you have Apple Arcade, so hopefully you can find something that will make you feel a little bit better.
Yep, and as I said earlier, you know, that's one of the reasons why I decided to go Apple One, is because I was thinking about this this iOS to iPadOS upgrade, and I thought, well, if I'm going to lose Sid Meier's Civilization, I might need another casual game to play. So I thought, well, maybe I could find something Apple Arcade. I haven't found anything yet that's got the staying power. I've been playing Civilization 20-something years now, maybe more. Oh, no, more than 20-something years, probably closer to 30 years. But it's a good alternative. At least there's a lot of variety to choose from. Okay, now the big event. All right. Tuesday, November 10th, Apple event, probably the Apple Silicon stuff. I'm guessing there's going to be an Apple Silicon Mac Mini, because that's what the reference device that developers can buy is based on. But I don't really care. You know, we waited so long for the Mac Mini, I no longer care about the Mac Mini, even though I waited for it like every year around this time for years and years. But I am really looking forward to the Apple Silicon-based MacBooks. Now, we know there's going to be a MacBook Air-type device, and we know there's going to be a MacBook Pro-type device. In fact, I've seen a number of articles saying the MacBook Pro running Apple Silicon apparently benchmarks faster than the Intel-based MacBook Pros. So I'm looking forward to, you know, that performance boost. Not that the performance boost is bad now, but more importantly, running iPadOS applications on it. To me, that's the real draw for me. But the question is, what's aside from power, you know, processing power, what do you think the difference is? One of my, I'm guessing one will have a touch bar and one won't, like the current MacBook Pros do versus the other MacBooks. But I'm wondering if one of them will have a touch screen and one won't. Gosh, I hope that's not the case.
I don't know. I don't think there's much we can know for sure until Tuesday. This is out of all the events that we've had this year, this is the one that I think is hardest to read.
Yep.
Even though we sort of are very confident about what's going to be announced there. And we know we're not going to see new iPhones or iPads or Apple Watches. I mean, obviously, those are tapped out for the year. But it will be interesting. It's interesting to me to think about the Mac Mini, actually.
Really?
Because I'm thinking, what would be the price point that I would pick one up just to play
with? Oh.
And I've been kind of curious about these, Apple Silicon devices, if they're going to have slightly lower price points,
because and that's the rumor.
Apple bringing production in house, if they have a Mac Mini for $799, $699, that's going to be a really tempting one just to pick up, just to have fun with.
Really? You don't think that's too expensive?
It depends on what my use scenario would be for it. It would, if I could fit it in here with my NAS and everything else, and just VNC into it and kind of use it for perhaps device configuration. I did that for a while when I had a Mac Mini before that was running all the time. Use it for, like development work or something, along those lines. So I don't know. It would be very interesting just to have it to play with and see how well it works. But if it's not at that price point, and I probably, the $799 would be a hard justification. The $699 a little bit easier.
Yeah.
But if it's still $899, $999, I can wait until Gen 2. But that's where I'm mostly interested to see how it goes.
Well, it's funny because when you said that, I was trying to think, my very first Mac of the modern era was the Mac Mini I bought in 2004, I guess. And the thing that was a big draw for me, aside from the fact I was really interested in using a Mac again, was I think it started at $499, which is what I bought. And it had not much. It had, I think, four gigabytes of memory, maybe 2 gigabytes of memory. And I want to say 164 or 128 gigabytes of storage. Oh, no, it's 80 gigabytes of storage. at $4.99. I thought, you know what? I can deal with that. And it was great. And I used it for a number of years until I finally convinced myself to buy an iMac in 2008, 4 years later, to replace it, which was a good timing because my Mac Mini died right about then, system board failure. But at any rate, I was going to say if the Mac Mini comes in at $3.99, which is half of your price point practically.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, $3.99, I will definitely order one. Yeah. And, you know, $7.99 is the base Mac Mini right now.
Wow, I didn't know that.
$7.99 will get you the 3.6 gigahertz quad-core i3 with 8 gigs of RAM and 256 SSD.
Wow.
So not a lot of space.
Right.
But the $10.99 only bumps that up to a 512 gig SSD and a 6-core i5 processor. So.
Yeah. Well, for me, at $3.99, I would think about a Mac Mini. Because my 2008 iMac still works. I upgraded to 4 gigs of RAM and stuff, and it's you know, kicking along, still updates. Of course, it doesn't update to current version. But anyway, I was going to say what really interests me is the MacBook, probably the lower one, whatever the MacBook or MacBook Air type device is, unless the MacBook Pro has a touchscreen and the MacBook doesn't. That's kind of my target, and I've been hearing $800 to $900 for that. So about the same price as an iPad Pro, an entry-level iPad Pro, which is kind of interesting. So I'm thinking not a touchscreen. That would reduce the price. But the ability to write, again, the ability to run iPadOS applications is a real, real intriguing thing to me. So, yeah, like you said, John, no sense speculating anymore because there was really not much to speculate on. I haven't seen a lot of leaks about the Apple Silicon devices. And maybe it's because I haven't looked hard, but... everybody's saying that it's going to pretty much look exactly like the current MacBook line. You know, they haven't changed the chassis, so there's nothing radical physical redesign. So it's all going to be what's inside. We'll find out in less than 48 hours now, I guess. Yep. Okay, and John's got something to make us laugh our last time.
Yeah, so on Friday night, my wife and I noticed that a local restaurant that has a large open patio area mm-hmm. was advertising that they had poo-poo platters. And this is a local Mexican restaurant, so it was kind of an interesting Mexican version of a poo-poo platter. Okay. It was, let me look at what was on it. It was sirloin, shrimp, chimichanga, hot tamales, and Mexican mac and cheese. So the funnier thing of it was we went there, we ordered one, we went and sat outside, waited for it to be ready.
Yeah.
And the table next to us, when they did bring out the platter, the table next to us came over and said, what is that? You know, this is a an area that is, this patio is shared by two different restaurants that are owned by the same person. So we said, well, you know, we went over there and we got this, it's a poo-poo platter. And the woman looked at me and went, what is it? Instead of poo-poo platter. And the look on her face was basically, you're putting me on. That's not what that's called. There's no way that could be what that's called. So I felt kind of bad that she didn't believe me, but it was very tasty. So my wife and I were happy with it. We would definitely, next time the restaurant's doing that, they do it every so often, we might go back. But that was my Hawaiian connection this week in rural Mississippi.
That's pretty funny because, you know, when we talk about poo-poo platters here in Hawaii, basically it's appetizers, right? And so it can, you know, generally speaking, it's a Hawaiian type or not me. I won't even say, what is it, Hawaiian food always? No, I mean, sometimes a poo-poo platter of like, you know, Chinese kind of foods. But anyway, so that's okay. I mean, you know, I can see that as a... as a poo-poo platter, it sounds actually pretty appetizing to me. But I can see where not in Hawaii, it might, the name itself might throw people off. You know, in Hawaii, we go yum. Yes. You know?
Yep.
And I'm looking up.
Yeah, you know, that was definitely it.
And I never knew where the word came from. You know, in Hawaii, we use a whole bunch of words, and most of us don't know where the word, the origins of the word. So I'm looking it up. Apparently, it has morphed from Mandarin. Apparently, yeah.
Hmm.
So originally it's Bao Bao Pan, and Bao is like a gosh, what's the equivalent in American food? In Hawaii we call it manapua a lot. Bao is a like a usually a breaded product wrapped around meat. And it's usually an appetizer, although it can in Hawaii we eat it as a meal too. But anyway, I just learned that myself, having used the word poo-poo for decades and decades. I just learned it comes from Mandarin.
Well, I just sent you a picture of what I ate on Friday night, and it will probably make you very jealous because it was a very tasty assortment.
Oh, that looks good.
Food.
It does look good. All righty, John. Well, hopefully we'll be able to talk next week when, you know, after we've heard what Apple announces in 48 hours from now, more or less, and we'll have something to say about it. Maybe we might have even ordered something from that selection.
Never know.
Yep. Okay, Mobile Views Podcast, whatever the heck it is, 338, signing off.